What's your fetest?
Okay. Just checking to see if there was anyone else due, and I think we're about there. Probably one other person might come in a minute. But right, so we can start this session. I'll pick it up on the mic. I'm pleased to introduce to you Rachel Sinha, who is Sustainability Manager for ICAW. She's been in place for 3 years now. Produces guidance for members to manage all aspects of sustainability performance. Great word. Run road shows and events covering issues like CRC, energy efficiency, schemes with Carbon Trust and Environment Agency, and conferences on environmental issues in the annual financial reporting. I'm busy. Represents the interest of members responding to government consultations on GHG reporting, etc. They're quite busy on that side of life. I'll hand over to Rachel.
Thank you very much. Indeed. Yes, so I am here today to talk to you about your carbon emissions. And I want to start by giving you a little bit of context and some background to think around some of the issues to do with sustainability and carbon. And then I really want to get into a bit of the technical detail around how you can start to count on carbon and manage carbon within your organisation, and create a kind of action plan for taking steps to manage this issue. And then I want to spend a bit of time at the end thinking about how we can start to look at carbon in our own organisations. And so the end's going to be a bit more of a workshop-y style thing. I don't want to talk at you for too long and bore you senseless. So I will kick off with some definitions, if I may. And I want to start with definitions for sustainability. I know you've been talking around this subject, you will be today and you have done yesterday, but just so that we can make sure that we're all on the same page in terms of this particular session. From my point of view, sustainability is about maintaining the resources on which business is based and not depleting our natural and human capital. Business sustainability are all the activities that businesses undertake in order to reach that goal. And so it's really important, I think, to realise that any business activity that we undertake will always have an impact on society, the environment and the economy. And so we have to be mindful of this. And sustainability is really about trying to build the positive impact that we have and minimise the negative impact. I think it's always quite good to give an example. This concept can be a bit difficult to get your head around. And to use a large-scale organisation, when Coca-Cola opened a bottling plant in Kerala in southern India, they used an unfair proportion of the local natural water reserves. And as a result, there was a huge NGO and a resulting media outcry that went very quickly around the world. So Coca-Cola actually lost their licence to operate in that area, and the factory had to be closed down. And so you can see that this is an environmental issue. We're talking about an issue of water that has a social impact, first of all for the local community who are unable to sustain themselves, but also I think for maybe the staff that worked at that factory who perhaps weren't quite so proud to go into work the next day when there was a huge media outcry outside the offices, and then which led to an economic impact when they actually lost their jobs. This also had an impact on the share price of Coca-Cola and on sales in the region. So it's just realising that anything that we do, that business doesn't operate in a vacuum, that we're surrounded by people that care about these things increasingly, and that we have to just be careful about the impact that we have on these three things and keep in mind that we are having an impact however small our organisation is. Because of the pressures of things like climate change, managing carbon is one of the largest of the sustainability issues that certainly I come across with our members in the work, and I'm sure you will find a similar thing. A study by the Department of Energy and Climate Change in 2011 this year found that business and transport account for more than 42% of UK emissions. So the government in this country has really taken quite a stand on carbon and has been since the Climate Change Act came into force a few years ago. I'm really going to try and get companies to start driving down the carbon emissions of their organisations. And I think that this push is going to continue to increase. So it's really a growing trend that we need to start addressing now. And I think the first movers in that market can take opportunity of it. A study by Accenture and the UN Global Compact, which was launched in New York in June last year, found that 80% of CEOs believe that sustainability will be fully integrated across the global business in 10 to 15 years' time. So what we found at the Institute and generally in business is that a lot of the large organisations are already doing a lot of stuff around this, but increasingly the smaller and more medium-sized organisations are also adopting this, and I think it will continue to push down. I want to just take a moment to invite you to do a quick show of hands of who is managing the carbon in their organisation. How many of you report and measure and report carbon in your companies? Right. Okay, then. That's very interesting, isn't it? Well, it's a good job you're here, then. I can tell you all the information that you need to know so that you can start to do that. In fact, you're not alone in this, so let's not be too alarmed by that. the Carbon Trust survey in 2010 that we took part in found that 72% of the FDs that they interviewed anticipated that businesses were going to need to measure their carbon footprint and manage this in the next decade. But in fact, only 26% of them felt ready to do this. So there is a massive gap, especially around the accountancy profession, I believe, of how to do this. And there's also this growing pressure from government and elsewhere to start doing it. So you've got a situation where really we need to start building capacity and learn these skills quite quickly. But what's quite good about this, I think, is that actually accountants have got a lot of skills already in their toolkit to be able to deal with these kind of things. So we're finding that increasingly our members, and I imagine you will be the same, are being asked to guide their organisation's carbon management strategy. And they're doing things like setting budgets for purchasing carbon allowances in the bigger organisations, but also mostly managing carbon data, so measuring, reporting the carbon emissions of their organisations. One of the key drivers to this, as I alluded to earlier, is this thing called the Carbon Reduction Commitment Energy Efficiency Scheme, which many of you may know about. It affects over 3,000 businesses in the UK, and it's designed to be a behaviour change piece of legislation. So it has caused quite a lot of media interest and pushback from the business community. And it includes organisations of all sorts, so it's not just business, it's also schools and universities, supermarkets and libraries, so it's kind of organisations of that kind of size. So it's really a move to the government to try and start hitting this small to medium-sized band of organisations rather than energy producers and things where legislation previously lay. So just a little bit of background about CRC in case you don't know about it and you're interested. April the 1st of this year, participants will be asked to pay for every tonne of carbon resulting from the energy use of the sites that they control. The level will be calculated from the 1st of April this year to the 31st of March next year, and they'll be asked to pay after the 31st of March in 2012. And the cost of per tonne is initially set at £12. So it's estimated that it's going to add approximately 7 to 9% to energy costs of organisations that are captured within this scheme. There has been quite a lot of discussion around this, and I did a roadshow on it last year, as was mentioned earlier, and actually it's entirely changed in the last 12 months. So my advice, if you are captured by this or you have clients that are captured by this, is to keep going back to the DECC, the DECC website, because they have up-to-date information on it. And also I found that the big firms, the big four, have amazing guides on this issue, and they keep them very up-to-date. So that's definitely kind of where we get our source of information on this. But I spoke to Vincent Neat of KPMG, and he said that at the moment, there is no authoritative accounting guidance within IFRS or UK GAAP for transactions involving carbon allowances. So now that we know that this cost is going to be a known entity, it would be sensible to start accounting for it in line with an organisation's existing accounting principles. So start accounting for the carbon cost as an operating expense in profit and loss accounts. And as I said, if you are interested in this, it is subject to change reasonably often, so I would definitely recommend that you go and have a look on the website of one of the Big Four or DEC. So, now I want to just go into a little bit of detail about what your carbon footprint is and how we measure it and the sort of some of the issues around that. So, and I'd like to start off with, again, a definition, and this is from the Carbon Trust, who say that a carbon footprint measures the total greenhouse gas emissions caused directly and indirectly by a person, organisation, event or product. And carbon footprint is measured in tonnes of carbon dioxide or equivalent. So the carbon footprint of an organisation tends to be covered by things like your energy use from your business, from your buildings, industrial processes and company vehicles. And carbon footprints are broken down into three scopes. So a bit of jargon that gets used in this area and good to know. Scope one emissions are all of those emissions that are created by direct emissions arising from the organisation's activities. So this is a good example of this is if you were EDF Energy, for example, you produce a lot of carbon emissions on site and they are known as scope one emissions. Scope two emissions are all of those emissions related to organisations' energy use. So your, things like your electricity and your heat and any steam that's produced on site. And it's these two, scope one and scope two, that are generally seen as the two ones to watch for organisations who are starting to look at this issue, which, as we've already identified, I think most of you are in that category, so that's good. And scope three are more indirect emissions. And there's a little bit of debate that goes on around this area. And it's things like business travel, emissions in your supply chain, emissions for the products that you use in your organisation. So it's a little bit less easy to define this scope three emissions. Hence, there's quite a lot of debate around it. And the choice to report on these kind of emissions is quite often left to companies' discretion. So if you're asked to report your carbon emissions, usually you would just talk about your scope one and scope two. So most of the time, if you're a business that isn't producing something, it will mainly be around the heat and electricity that you use. So how can you start to map your emissions? Right, well, the first thing to note is that you need to get have a consistent method in order to get accurate results. So you need to be try, especially, in fact, if you're going to be getting different people within the organisation to count these things. So it's really important that you choose something and stick to it. There are a number of different publicly available methodologies. Some good sources for these, I would suggest, are the Greenhouse Gas Protocol. They've got a publication that's called Corporate Accounting and Reporting Standard, which gives a sort of high-level, commonly cited methodology. And it's often used for the basis of more detailed measurement and standards. So that's the Greenhouse Gas Protocol. And the second one is in the UK Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, DEFRA. And this is a piece of guidance on how to measure and report your greenhouse gas emissions. And this is it's kind of in the UK the standard. It's kind of what people tend to use. And I would definitely recommend that if you're interested in this area, that would be a good port of call. Some other things that you need to think about when you're thinking about measuring your carbon emissions are around boundaries. So organisational boundaries, this is one of the other contentious issues. So which part of your organisations are you going to include in your footprint? If you've got a big organisation, it can get a bit complicated. So are you thinking about the entire organisation, or are you talking about a division or a subsidiary or just a specific site? And you need to just make sure that you write that whenever you're reporting your emissions. This can get a little bit confusing if there are many subsidiaries, numerous joint ventures, for example, and leased assets. So that takes a little bit of thinking about. And as I mentioned, this thing about operational boundaries is also really important. So scope one, scope two, or scope three emissions, which ones are you going to report? And it really depends very much on the nature of the activities of your business. So and also on the availability of robust data. So you don't want to report something if you can't be sure that it's correct. So when you're choosing, like, which of these boundaries to use, you need to have a think about how your organisation works, what are the reporting periods you already have, any legislative requirements, and the practicalities of data collection. Which moves me on to the next point, which is around data collection. So it's really important, I would say, obviously, to collect data that's thorough and accurate as possible. The main sources of data are normally your gas and electricity, so measure the consumption of your gas or electricity by reading the appropriate meter on your premises. Metered information is generally recorded in kilowatt hours. But if it's not possible to read your meter, then you can use the bills from your utility supplier. Although it's important to note that these bills can often be estimates, so your actual consumption may vary. That's an important point. The second thing is around other fuels, such as diesel and petrol and coal, etc. If your organisation consumes any other fuels on site, heating, transportation or manufacturing, you should also record that use as well. And then finally, transport. If your organisation owns or operates or leases any transportation for business use, such as company cars or delivery fleets, you need to include them in your carbon footprint. So these do come into the scope 3 category that we talked before, but if they're a really important part of your business, you do actually need to include them. And the preferred method of calculation for these is actual fuel use. But if it's not possible, then an indirect calculation based on the vehicle type and engine size and mileage is also acceptable.
So would we take a question?
Yes, please.
If you're in a situation where your business is in a building where all the services are provided centrally by a landlord and therefore all of your energy is basically part of the rent you pay,
yeah.
Is there an alternative to doing it on the basis of some factor of the volume you occupy, and then factor in the number of devices you have plugged in?
Can I help with that one, actually?
Because
VAT is actually in that position.
Okay.
And so what we've done, is we have gone to the landlord. Now, they meter each floor, because they want to know if they're recovering enough from us, from the rent we pay. So you could approach your landlord, first of all, to see if they can actually give you a reading. But your alternative is a very good way as well.
Yeah.
So we've actually approached them. Okay.
Well, there's lots of businesses on the same floor, so yeah. Probably not going to be individually metered, I would think.
Yeah. It's worth the question.
But you can ask them. But,
yeah.
But if not, then there is a way of doing it by volume, then.
I think you can get a reasonable estimate.
Yeah,
from that.
I think.
Unless someone more intensive in the use of energy than you. Sorry.
No. No, it's great to have it. Yeah, no, it's really great to have them. Well, it's interesting because the next point that I was going to make is around this idea of, so when you're communicating your footprint, you need to mention any data that's missing and why it's unavailable and any assumptions that you've made for clarity and transparency. So it's fine. Almost every organisation has some difficulty in finding their carbon footprint, and that's accepted in this market. It's totally fine. But you just have to be very transparent about what you have done and what you haven't done, the assumptions and estimations that you've made with the data that was available. And that's perfectly acceptable. When we're thinking about creating a sustainable business action plan, we do this by starting with our carbon footprint. So we've talked a bit about where we can find the data that we can use to do this. But actually, a carbon footprint is calculated using predefined emissions factors that are used to convert the consumption data into tonnes of CO2. You can do this yourself, but you should always use conversion factors from credible sources. So don't just sort of Google it and find the top five search term, because there are so many carbon calculators out there. So it's really important to use a credible source. Again, there's a detailed list that's given by DEFRA, the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, and I would always revert back to these few sources that I'm giving you. So DEC, DEFRA, the Carbon Trust, organisations like that are very credible in this area. But carbon footprinting tools can range anywhere from an Excel spreadsheet to a online calculator to a whole sort of carbon management software piece. So we're in transition here, and organisations are using different ways to measure and report these things, and that's fine. The Carbon Trust, as I mentioned, has got a number of tools that can help you calculate your carbon footprint. And you can do it online, actually. And you can also get, I mean, at the Institute, what we did was get the Carbon Trust to come in and they did a free carbon survey for us, which for organisations of our size, I think we've got 600 staff. So, it works out very well and it's free and it's good to have somebody just help you to start with so you can get your head around it and then you can kind of copy what they told you to do and improve it, of course. But, of course, a footprint is only good as the data that's collected behind it, so do try your best to gather data in a consistent and transparent way, I think. So the next step is really around, okay, so you can measure you know where you are now, but how can you start to reduce your energy? How can you start to improve your carbon footprint? There are a number of ways that you can do this, and I'm just going to give you some basics on this. The first is around staff awareness. So this is engaging your employees in a sort of switching off campaign. So educating them on how to switch off essential equipment whenever practical. Now, this includes things like computer monitors and light switches and air conditioning units. And a good way that we found some of the organisations we've been speaking to is to get, ask your staff, who wants to be a champion? There's normally at least one or two people within an organisation who've got an interest in this area anyway. to ask the audience and get them to come forward and step forward and give them the responsibility rather than putting it on somebody that perhaps isn't that enthusiastic. We find works quite quickly, and you can have sort of competitions between different departments on who's got the least, who's used the least energy in a month or etc., etc. So I think that this kind of engaging staff in sustainability can be a really powerful way. And it's also, it's really good for employee engagement generally as well, because I think people like to be asked their opinion about things that they have strong values about, but also to be involved in the running of the business and thinking about these kind of new issues and trends. So we found that it's quite... it has additional benefits other than the cost savings incurred by saving energy. So also look at things like heating and cooling. So make sure windows and doors are closed and that heating or cooling systems are in use. You only operate one at a time. So obviously don't heat and cool simultaneously is potentially a good start. But also to ensure that the systems are only really working when people are in the building, and to start thinking about... If you're updating your boiler, for example, to start thinking about, looking at a longer payback period, but choosing something that is more energy efficient because it will save money. You can get good advice on taking first steps on this from a website called Business Link, which, again, I would very much recommend, especially for SMEs. It's really got a lot of sort of top tips, but more specific advice is available from the Carbon Trust if you're interested in that. And it's also good, I mean, I don't know what sectors you all work in, and we'll talk a bit about that later, but there's loads of sectorial advice on this as well. So if you're in manufacturing, you can find heaps of work on that. If you're just, if you're an accountant, you can find loads of information about how to start thinking about these things. So just having a search of the Carbon Trust and Business Link and a couple of government websites is a really good start. It is sensible to try and get third-party verifications and certify your carbon footprint, especially once you get going with this. But again, you need to make sure that you're using a credible source and that it's consistent. I would suggest the Carbon Trust Standard is a good place to start on that. And they can verify. It helps you to sort of be able to communicate with confidence about what you've done. Yes?
How is it going to be policed? I mean, it seems to be voluntary.
Well, that's a very good question. The question is who's going to police it, I think, really. At the moment, there isn't anybody that polices it. And so you do get organisations who have, who might, through lack of transparency of their information, one year have a huge carbon footprint and the next year use a different factor to analyse their data, or don't include scope 1 or scope 2 and not scope 3 anymore and have a massive cut in their emissions. So we are in that transition stage. The government are trying to get to the point where we can have consistency about how we're measuring and reporting this kind of stuff. But at the moment, we're not there. So that's why I'm saying in the industry and in the sector of sustainability generally, it's very well recognised that, you know, these places like the Carbon Trust and the government websites and Business Link and things have a lot of credibility in this area. So I would suggest that you go to them. Although, you know, there will be others and potentially competitors who take a sneaky route and find a better way of reporting, so it makes them look better. But, you know, I would obviously encourage you to be responsible with your with your choices. Because people do know and sign up to things that people in your sector are signing up to, I think. That's a good point, though, and slightly worrying one, but anyway. Okay, so the last thing is around offsetting. So carbon offsetting is this idea that basically you pay someone somewhere else to save emissions that are equivalent to the ones that you've used. This is another kind of contentious area within carbon. It was so exciting, there's hundreds of them. Anyway, this is an idea that so lots of companies claim to be carbon neutral, and so what they're saying by that is it's not that they're not producing any carbon, but what they're doing is they are cutting the carbon as much as possible, so reducing their energy bills and reducing the emissions in that way, and then they're paying people to offset the remainder of their carbon emissions. And therefore claiming that they're carbon neutral. So there's lots of different organisations that do this. Some of them are more credible than others. And you can offset in many different ways. So things like buying a sector of the rainforest or investing in not chopping down the rainforest, basically, or doing things like replacing domestic wood-burning stoves in villages in India with more energy-efficient versions. So there's a whole range of ways that, under the Kyoto Protocol, actually, that people have started to think about how we can offset our emissions. Our view at the Institute is that we should reduce our emissions as much as we can and then offset any excess with a reputable company, and to very much state that that's what we're doing. One that I would suggest is called the Carbon Neutral Company. They're very reputable, they've been around for a long time, and they're very well known in the industry. But any company that you use, you should check the following things. So are you buying credits from projects that comply with the Kyoto Protocol and are verified, therefore, by the UN? Are the credits being delivered within a year of buying them? You should be able to declare clearly how many credits how much credit costs per ton. Provide information about the role of offsetting in tackling climate change and advice on how to reduce your carbon footprint. So they should be helping you to work through those things. So not just letting you offset your entire emissions, but helping you to work out your strategy of how it can be better. And as I said, the carbon neutral company are quite good at that. Yeah, do so responsibly and try and cut your emissions as much as possible in order to avoid what we call greenwash, which is where companies say that they're very sustainable when actually they're not. And you can do yourself a lot of brand damage by greenwashing. So avoid that at all costs. Really what we're talking about is trying to present your carbon footprint as clearly and honestly as possible, to provide complete information about the steps that you've used, the scope that you've used, the methods, the boundaries, the data quality and the assumptions that you've been using, and keep a consistent approach over the years that you're doing so. And also make sure that you explain the changes in reporting or business structure that might impact your footprint. So, for example, you could, if you're unscrupulous, have a very large organisation, sell off a bit of it, and then say that you've got a hugely massive reduction in carbon emissions, which has been known, not naming any names. But so you need to think about these things because of this greenwashing thing and the fact that the media are quite interested in this area, especially if you're advising clients or etc. So, in summary, you need to measure your carbon footprint, you need to manage it and reduce it, and then you need to engage your stakeholders in doing so. By doing so, you can really cut costs in your organisation by saving money, by cutting your energy usage, And by getting people to switch things off and engaging your employees, you can also motivate them in new ways that you didn't think was possible before. You don't have to invest lots of money or make massive changes, and you can still save money on your energy bills. So, yeah, I would suggest that the right combination of small changes can be really positive in this area. I hope that's given you a bit of background information about it. We're now, that brings me to the end of my presentation, and I was thinking we could do 5-10 minutes on questions. And then what I want to do is to do a little bit of work at the tables or find somebody who's sitting somewhere near here, as everyone seems to have sat on their own, and do a bit of thinking about how we can start thinking about cutting carbon in our own organisations or in the organisations that we're working with. And so, yeah, I'll open for questions and then let's move on to that section in a moment. So just to be mindful of the time and that, yeah, I think we're doing well, actually, we're fine. Does anyone have any questions for me? Yes.
Two questions. One is around chemical process engineering and how you would actually pick up the heat that you produce during the processes, etc. there. Is that something, because you're actually usually heating the building, you've got the equipment or the plant in,
yeah,
and then you're not therefore heating it by using other heat. You know what I mean? It's an opposite scenario. And the other thing is heat exchangers generally. How do you deal with those? Because if you're, again, part of your process, you actually use a heat exchanger, do you just net off all the way through or what? Because my thought is that actually you might be making it sort of, what shall I say, masking the effect of what you're doing because you're using far too much carbon, although you can offset it.
Yeah.
What can you do to, should you be actually measuring how much heat you are producing and therefore how much you're using actually to, if you like, a sort of income and expenditure account on it, so you can sort of see what you've got or what you're outputting and what you're getting back. You with me?
I'm with you. Utterly. the short answer to that is I don't know. But I do know that on the Carbon Trust website there is a whole set of guides around sector specific issues, and I know that there are some around that are looking around this kind of area, so I would suggest that you go and have a look at that. I don't know. Some of these things are quite complicated. My general point would be the one that I made earlier, which is take a call on it, have a look, read the guidance that you can find on the Carbon Trust website. I would also suggest that you perhaps speak to the Carbon Trust themselves because they can offer free advice, and if it is something that's a little bit not so much of a sort of out-of-the-box solution, it could be really helpful to get some advice on that, professional advice. But that you could, in my opinion anyway, you could make a call on that, and as long as you report it accurately and you're very transparent about what you've done and how you've offset it, I think that would be fine. But I would definitely suggest speaking to the Carbon Trust. Yes?
Yeah, the CRC Energy Efficiency Scheme.
Yeah.
When does that actually start? When do you have to start paying for that? I think small businesses aren't included yet. Is there a threshold for carbon consumption, tons of carbon, where you actually start that?
Yeah. I can't remember that either. Fantastic.
I think it's larger companies, isn't it? You mentioned it.
Yeah, very much so.
What I'm interested in is, I think you're correct, it's definitely right to raise that. I think eventually it will come to all businesses.
Yeah.
And that's why we've waken up to this now, we can actually prepare for it.
Yeah. I think the idea is that there's already a lot of things like the EU ETS, the European kind of trading scheme around that, designed to hit very big businesses. And now the idea with the Climate Change Act is very much to push carbon management down through the chain to the very smallest of organisations, recognising that they represent the biggest proportion of the UK economy. So having spoken to the Environment Agency about it, yeah, the idea is that we start off with working with some larger, medium-sized organisations, I guess, And as you know, and as you've mentioned, this includes public sector, universities, supermarkets. It's organisations really of that size. And I can't remember the exact carbon. I can look it up while we have the workshop and I'll let you know. But yes, the intention of the government is to continue to move down the supply chain. So this will be impacting all UK government, UK businesses, I think, within the decade.
Sorry, go on.
It was just that they spoke about this, and it was if you use more than 600,000
megawatts,
which is £500,000 worth of electricity.
Thank you. Lovely.
That's where it comes in.
Wonderful. I should make a note of that. Thank you. That's fantastic.
It was in the first.
I missed that one.
You missed that one yesterday. And you did. Thank you. You did mention it.
Fantastic. Thank you for that.
Sorry.
Of that original 40% that you mentioned, of the emissions that's due to business.
Yeah, and transport. Yeah.
And transport. Yeah. Personal transport as well as included in that 40%, is it?
Yes.
Right. I was just sort of thinking. Well, going on from this theme about it's the bigger businesses first that are having to take action and record and comply with these things. But it's quite possible that because the physical number of smaller businesses is so vastly bigger than the actual physical number of large businesses, that in fact that 40%, if you was to break it down into large businesses and small businesses, you might actually find that quite a large bit of that 40% is due to the activities of very small businesses.
Exactly. I think that's exactly what the government have recognised, and that's why they're trying to. But they're just also realising that it's quite an administrative burden, and we are in this period of transition. So while we don't have the, as you mentioned, while we don't have the standards and we don't have the kind of methodology really firmed up, it's a lot to put on very small organisations. So I think that they are trying to sort of, this. I've been involved in doing a lot of the representations to the consultations that they've issued around this piece of legislation, and it just keeps getting changed all the time because there's a lot of pushback and it is a behaviour change thing and one size doesn't fit all, and so they're really trying to keep that administrative burden off the very smallest organisations at the moment, but it will definitely filter down.
What about the supply chain? Doesn't that make the double count?
Yeah, you know what I mean. Yeah, one large organization then supplying another, they're going to have both of them count on what they've done. Yeah, and then if you put one bit's production into the other one, you've got a double count. Yeah, this doesn't make sense. No, you're absolutely right, it doesn't make sense, and it's a big problem, double counting, so it's a good point. And one that a lot of big organisations have had problems with. I know, for example, BT had huge issues with it. That, again, there isn't an easy solution to this. So there's a big debate around, actually, one that I think is quite interesting, about this idea of, we're talking about the emissions in the UK, but we don't really produce that much in this country. We outsource our emissions, really, to China, and we then tell them that they're not allowed to emit X, Y, and Z. And so there's this huge international debate about should we be taxing, should we be, taxing the emissions on consumption rather than on production. So again, we're just in this transition period. Double counting, the reason why I suggest that you use the guidance and the standards that I've outlined here is because then if we can try and encourage people to use the same thing, then they have very clearly outlined what you should count and what you shouldn't. And that makes it comparable against competitors and comparable and for the government to understand as well. So,
but are we talking really going back to saying there's a carbon cost for everything? And are we actually looking at a series of taxes on certain products which would then define how we use them? So you're talking about a whole series of purchase carbon taxes, yes?
Again,
that way it will start to work, because you won't get it this way. Trying to get people to actually is really not going to help at all.
Yeah. I mean, there's agreed. Well, I don't know. The way that we look about it at the Institute is there's a whole load of market mechanisms that work to drive sustainable business, and some of them are things like taxes, and some of them are more informal things, so things like consumer pressure. So there's a whole debate, again, another debate, about Walker's Crisps, who started to think about how they could work out the carbon used to produce a bag of crisps. And could they put that on the bag of crisps? Which I think they did work out, and it cost them an awful lot of money. And then they realised that actually consumers don't really, A, care, B, know what it means, C. So, you know, so it's a sort of, it's a really difficult area, basically. And yes, I think that the government has realised that the quick way to get change here, and they've set some really high targets for themselves, is to tax it and create a levy, which is what the CRC is now. But there are different mechanisms that you can use, and I think that different parts of the market are trying to use different ones at the same time. So it's a little bit, again, a period of experimentation on the legislative front, I think, as well. I know it's not great, but it's for the greater good. Yeah.
I was wondering, what about capital expenditure for like your process machinery in your factory, yeah, buying vehicles or something? So really, the obviously should account for that carbon in production of the manufacturer, and then you buy it.
Yeah.
Problems is always like this no man's land, isn't it? All these things, always the ones that slip through the net. You know, they did a survey some years ago, and I think the percentage is reduced, but it's something like 10 times the energy to produce a car as it ever consumes in its lifetime.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Mm-hmm. You know, on one hand, you're getting, got to buy new because it's energy efficient, but you're supposed to reuse, recycle, but, you know, and you're better off sometimes if you know, there's perfectly good machinery going and get scrapped, and then there's more energy being used to scrap it, and then there's all built-in energy that's kind of just written off, you know, where you know, you could actually keep a car a little bit longer.
Yes.
I did have a chat with a guy who worked for an energy saving organisation sponsored by the government, and they were high prices. He said, brilliant. He said, I've got a cottage up in Wales from Cornwall. And he said, I've got that way, 85 miles an hour, this price, no problem at all. And I was thinking, that's not quite the point. Because it was actually using as much fuel as my 4x4. But my 4x4 does a job because mine, it multitasks, so I need one vehicle to do everything.
Right, yeah.
And my 1970 tractor was just a job perfectly. No electronics, disposal of nasty chemicals.
Does this mean that producers of electric cars will be measuring their carbon footprint and trying to reduce it? Because I mean, the great thing about an electric car, isn't it, is that, you know, it's zero rated carbon emissions. Except the fact that it's got these huge batteries, and look at what goes into producing that and making the rest of it work.
Absolutely.
And that is just, it's five times or something worse than to produce a normal petrol or diesel driven car.
It's
a need for us invention, doesn't it? You know, we look at the second world war and we have all the carbon chassis, and then Monocoque came in, the Spitfire was a nightmare to make and maintain. Mustang, and it's monocoque, like a modern car, but the flight to Berlin was more fuel efficient, and it was built in 264 days, so the engine wasn't ready to fly. Then you go on, and you know, as it needed to, it's become more efficient as fuel prices have gone up. And then more recently, with photovoltaic, there was a sort of silica to make the photovoltaic panels, so that made the guys then look at it even more, and they halved the amount they used. And now in Israel, they actually, instead of one big panel just catching whatever sun there is, they actually did, the United Sky did a parabolic dish. They made a mirror about 4 square metres with a little tiny panel, concentrated all the light onto that tiny little panel, and made as much electric as the full size panel. So they only used that little tiny bit of chemicals. So it is kind of need is driving the invention.
And I think it's a really difficult time, basically, because we're talking about systemic issues. So you're absolutely right that, you know, an electricity company at the moment could be seen as electric car company could be seen as high in emissions when actually they're doing something for the greater cause of sustainability. And I think the government are coming round, and policymakers generally are coming round to the idea of looking at the whole system of things. So, I mean, slightly off topic, but I'm doing a project which is looking at the financial system and how we can create a financial system that sustains people and planet with World Wildlife Fund. And that's looking at everything all at once, because we've recognised that you have to look at everything all at once. Otherwise, it's really not a fair picture of where we are and where we need to get to. It's called the Finance Innovation Lab.
I think in the majority of people in this room will actually have small practitioners or their own businesses, accountancy businesses, advisory businesses.
Mm.
And what they really like to do is how can they advise their clients, and obviously themselves, their own businesses. But I've looked at your website, really, there's a lot of stuff there. I know there's a lot of stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned accountants. Where should we go then for the best advice of small? How we as a small business help ourselves, and then how we help the small businesses we help. What would be your top three or four?
Top three places to go. Business Link. Okay. I'll keep banging on that same place, then become a bit boring, I'm afraid. Carbon Trust is excellent, I think. There's another organisation, I think it's set up by Cranfield University, it's called the Small Business Journey, and that's just got loads of resources on SMEs and sustainability generally.
I think that's probably why when you ask how many of the section report, there's no response.
Yeah.
None of us are in a big enough organisation.
Yeah.
And we're all sort of here thinking.
Well, we're sort of starting it, but we haven't, we're starting to do it, we're doing stuff, and we're also, as a member of the body, we're trying to help in some of the integrated reporting consultants.
Yeah.
I could go behind that, because if you ask me the words of your report, I haven't got one to show you.
Because
the proof of putting is actually we've done a report on it, and that will come probably next year.
Mm-hmm.
We are starting to think about that.
Good.
It's like America, you know, look, it's massively consumers, but there is a big drive by a lot of Americans, if you look on the net and stuff, to actually start doing renewables and everything, looking at the whole picture.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that, because my job involves looking at things at a bit of a macro level on a daily basis and stuff, and there are just some really solid facts that are really convincing to me. For example, the fact that we've got a growing world population and we've got limited resources. So it doesn't take a genius to work out that at some point something's got to give.
Free
planet. Yeah, exactly. And that's not being, doom and gloom, that's just being realistic, it's a fact. And so this is something that, our generation, the next generation, the generation after that, is absolutely certainly going to have to deal with. So we may as well start thinking about it now, even if it is painful. And it is painful, but it needs doing, frankly. Right, what I'd like to do to continue this fantastic discussion, which we've already started, is... I want you to get into twos, at least. You can move into threes if it's better. So find somebody who looks lonely. it might be better just going backwards, perfect. I'll tell you. Okay, guys. That isn't the end of the workshop. So if I can have everyone's attention, please.
Hello.
So you're so excited, right? Okay, what I want you to do is, on your own, to start off with, for about 5 minutes, just think about what are some of the opportunities and threats of this carbon issue generally to your business, to your organisation. So we just think about that on our own and just come up with some ideas. So I want you to think around things like, what have we learned a little bit about legislation? What some of the opportunities might be around cost cutting or new service lines, or this could just be a whole range of things. Think about your value chain, think about your supply chain, about anything chain-ish. And just think about generally your organisation. What are the opportunities and what are the threats? And just take 5 minutes on that. And then what we're going to do is to come together in our twos or threes and just share what we've thought about and have a little bit of a discussion, obviously, around, you know, what the key things we think we've seen are. And then we'll come back together and have a discussion as a group again about it. So start with an introduction is always a polite way if you don't know each other already. And I can come around. If you've got any other questions, I'm really happy to answer them. So we'll take about 5 minutes on our own and then 20-odd minutes having discussion. Fantastic. Thank you. Hi everyone. Good. Jolly good. Okay, so we've got around about 5 minutes. I hope you found that interesting. I wanted to just see if we could just go around each two and being very careful of time, just to give one, two, three key points that you found in the opportunities or threats or commonalities, just really things that stand out to you about your discussion. And if we could start over here, that would be fantastic. Shout.
I think the first thing we noticed is that most opportunities would also be threats as well. So you know, so you have to sort of work out how do you tip them to the positive. The obvious sort of thing was opportunity was to actually reduce costs, you know, in energy consumption. Mm-hmm. One of the first ones we saw. A threat could well be something simple like loss of energy supply because, you know, the consumption level of within your area is just too high. That could give, like, you know, business disruption. We had concerns about climate change again impacting on a business. Might be something like a flood. Mm-hmm. You know, gives us another threat we had. We can carry on and on, but you have to go around the room.
No, that's great. Thank you very much. It's really interesting. So, anyone, do you want to carry on backwards? Was that?
One of the benefits that we saw was as an organisation, once you if you can get yourself carbon neutral, it's a really good selling point, and you can move yourself forward. We are carbon neutral. Mm-hmm. And depending on what you do, it might also be a selling point. You can say, and we can help you.
Brilliant.
And the threat?
We had higher costs, obviously being incredible. Yeah. In terms of tax, that's only going to increase over time.
Yeah.
As they increasingly tax less energy efficient methods.
Yeah. Brilliant. Okay.
The same ones, in fact.
Snap.
And I think we're going to find this.
Yeah.
The loss of energy supplies. Yeah. Possible loss of energy supplies.
Yeah.
The opportunity to be able to advise clients if we can get ourselves knowledgeable about this.
Yeah.
The opportunity to have some sort of image, possibly even, we went a stage further and said possibly some sort of certification, like ISO.
And IIP and all those sort of things. Yeah.
Fantastic. That sounds like a little business model bubbling up. Did you have any points at the back? You said that you'd solved it all, so let's hear it.
Shopping
is multi-bikes,
so we discussed
anything.
Yeah.
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 Any key points?
It's like almost like a 3-year, 4-year cycle for vehicles, and they recycle and you get new ones. So if you buy a vehicle here, a motorbike, you can't get spare parts for 6 months. And then once it gets to 4 years old, you have to wait for parts because it's now too old. And they're very big consumers. But there is. Can I pick up one thing about the energy and power cuts? Because I have been doing for a number of years now IT and telecom support and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a marked difference in the stability of the main supply.
Mm-hmm.
Despite what they do try to claim, you do have spikes and surges and whatever else. The whole infrastructure is being expanded as if building more industrial estates and housing estates, and they haven't fitted the infrastructure to match.
Yeah.
So you get, if the power goes off, you get a spike. Mm. You get something shorts out, like a cable shorts out to Earth, and it just takes out anything within 300 yards of it. Mm. So the implications are that you buy equipment, and if you don't actually put some protection in place, invest in that in the premises, you actually lose the equipment. And actually, it's the new equipment that blows before the old equipment. Mm. The new equipment isn't as resilient as the old stuff. We've had old stuff, and it's had some horrendous treatment, and it keeps on going.
Yeah.
Well, I'm talking about old stuff all the time, but there was a case for each. So it's protecting that. The other business issue with that is your data.
Right.
If you lose your data, there was a survey quite a few years, about 10 years ago now in the States, that 50% of all companies suffer a total data loss. Mm. Go out of business in 6 months, they're gone. And then the half of what's left is gone in a year.
Oh, God. So that's depressing, isn't it?
This change in the demand on power is quite dramatic.
Yeah, no, that's a very interesting point.
So if you want a common sense about a common sense approach.
Yeah, there's a couple of issues. The sustainable procurement is one, which is making sure your supply chain is working through as well, and reducing packaging and all that, which is common sense. Common sense issue is one that we don't really apply often enough. Common sense is what everybody should be doing on a daily basis. Simple things like not having cleaning out buildings outside normal office hours. Because the cleaners will come in at 6 in the morning, switch all your heating on, have a cup of tea at 7, and you'll be there till the buildings are open at full capacity.
And you give them the keys and you won't let your staff at that.
So there's lots of things you can do with just simple things.
Yeah, that sounds good. Thank you.
Very sort of difficult. But there's also a frustration of it as well. There's an inability to do things which people want to do, and that's a bit of a challenge. Everybody's keen on doing something. There's tremendous frustration about not being able really perhaps to influence as much as we would like. So
I thought, what about restrictive legislation? I'm kind of a bit ahead, because in all these measurements and so on, they come up with carbon emissions from a car, but it doesn't take into account the other things, as an example. And actually, you might want to do things that actually work quite well. You're going to get more use out of your equipment, but actually, the system won't allow you to do it.
Yeah.
So it could be inflexible, because it gets too tight and it's not actually looking at the big picture, but how do you do that?
Yeah. Just conscious of time, was there any burning points from the remainder of the groups that they would like to share with the wider group? No?
No.
I just wanted to really quickly summarise before. Just by saying I got here really early this morning, and so I decided that I would walk from the train station to the hotel 5 miles later, hour and a half later. And it was just really nice, because I live in London, and I don't get out much. And it was just really lovely to be in the beautiful, beautiful countryside. And I think that, you know, it can be quite difficult to find a way of marrying the things that we know we care about in our personal lives, you know, being outside, being in the garden, having this beautiful countryside that we have around us at the moment, and being efficient and effective in the workplace. And just wanted to say, really, that sustainability is a really good opportunity to be able to marry the two. Yes, we've identified that it's not easy, but it is really, really important, because these things we value so much as humans, and it would be really a great shame if we weren't able to offer the same amazing experiences that we've had to our children and our grandchildren. And I really think that although it's hard, it's kind of our responsibility to see this challenge and do something about it. And I just wanted to say that. But thank you very much. I very much enjoyed this morning. It's been really good fun.
Spontaneous applause. I think you have a really good job. Thank you very much.